Ross, Schroeder, and George versus Arts. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. May it please the court, my name is Jeff Enns, attorney on behalf of the appellants Lynn and D. Arts. Your Honors, this case involves a very limited and simple question. Who was responsible for paying Mr. Schroeder's legal fee? Ricky Jackson, for whom Mr. Schroeder sought a custody award in the district court, or the subject of that custody case, Sydney Hasselbeck's grandmother and step-grandfather, the appellants. The court found that an attorney-client relationship was formed between the appellants and Mr. Schroeder. I want to note the remark that the court makes before using the test to determine whether or not there was an attorney-client relationship. States, attorney-client relationships are treated differently than other relationships due to their special nature and the code of professional conduct that attorneys must follow. One would think that what would follow after that would be an explanation of how the burden is heavy on an attorney in those circumstances. However, that's not what happened. What happened was that the test for whether or not an attorney-client relationship exists from the court case McVaney versus Baird Home was used in determining whether or not the appellants owed Mr. Schroeder a fee. That test exists exclusively in cases that determine whether or not a client party has standing to file suit against an attorney for negligence.
Hasn't that standard been used in other cases beyond malpractice, for instance, in determining whether there is a conflict to disqualify an attorney?
I'm not aware of that, Your Honor. I know in terms of there have been cases that have cited McVaney where they use that case to determine or ask a question whether or not there's a duty owed to the client. But specifically regarding a contract, is this person responsible for paying my bill? There is a dearth of cases that would cite that test as a means of accomplishing that.
Do you think there's a different test that should be used in determining the existence of an attorney-client relationship?
Absolutely. Contract law. And that's the question would be, was there an implied contract? While the case states that attorney-client relationship is one that's bound in contract, there's really no contract analysis. What I would interpret these cases as would be as a means of protecting a layperson from attorney negligence. And as I point out in my brief, the third prong of the test, the attorney expressly or impliedly agrees to give or actually gives the desired advice or assistance, the court goes on to say, in appropriate cases, the third element may be established by proof of detrimental reliance when the person seeking legal services reasonably relies on the attorney to provide them, and the attorney, aware of such reliance, does nothing to negate it. What I would interpret that as is this is a shield to protect the layperson from bad advice. This is saying, attorneys, be careful when you hand out legal advice willy-nilly, because somebody could rely on that and somebody could be damaged significantly because of that. Certainly this is not a means of creating a weapon for an attorney to use to go after a client for their fee. And I think finding so in this case would essentially give a very dangerous tool to attorneys to go after unsuspecting laypersons. The question in this case was whether there was a meeting of the minds, a mutual agreement. There's not a lot of facts in dispute in this case. This is strictly a matter of, largely a matter of law. Mr. Schroeder entered an appearance on behalf of Ricky Jackson. The testimony from the trial, and I can highlight some of the testimony that was offered. Question asked of Mr. Schroeder on direct. At any time did you represent to the Artses that they were not responsible for any attorney's fees or costs that would be incurred as a result of carrying out their wishes? That particular question was misunderstood and then followed up with, when they left your office on that date, was there any question in your mind what your job was with respect to your representation in that lawsuit? No. There's continued testimony throughout the record. When you became involved in the lawsuit until the time of trial in this lawsuit, did the Artses ever tell you that they were not responsible for the attorney fee? No. Did they ever communicate with you in any way that they disagreed with the bill? No. Essentially saying that because they didn't say we don't owe you any money, they must owe the money. These questions are all questions to Mr. Schroeder as to what was going through your mind in all of this. The objective evidence that was offered speaks entirely to the contrary. We've got a letter from the appellant stating, here is some information to assist you in your representation of Ricky Jackson. We've got a check that was written to the law firm on behalf of Ricky Jackson, said loan Rick Jackson, in the memo of that check indicating it was a loan on behalf of Ricky Jackson. That was testified to by D. Arts in a deposition related to that case where she said Lynn loaned Ricky money. Mr. Schroeder testified no, he was there during that deposition. He never corrected her. It was only after the bill remained unpaid that...
Wouldn't the objective evidence also include the client questionnaire form?
Correct. That questionnaire essentially creates a trap for the unwary. These individuals came in, no discussions occurred with Mr. Schroeder. Simply, they were given this client questionnaire form and said, fill this out. The court relied on the fact that will somebody else be responsible for this bill, yes or no, that it wasn't checked. That is not on them. What Ms. Arts testified to was that...
If we're looking at the objective evidence, that shows the Artses as the clients, and D. Arts filled that out, right, saying she was the client.
The memo does say client memo. The testimony, the evidence of that was that they were, by both parties, that they were provided that. They were provided that information without any explanation, said fill this out. That certainly doesn't create any particular obligations, doesn't have any material terms of the representation contained on that. Essentially, that creates a trap for the unwary with, if you go into an attorney's office, fill this out, put your information on that, without any explanation, there's certainly no meeting of the minds in that regard. And I think one major thing to highlight here is that this involved a case where, and Mr. Schroeder testified to this, the argument was made to the court, to the Buffalo County District Court, that Ricky Jackson should be given custody. The testimony during the trial was that, now, he wasn't my client. My real clients were these other people sort of waiting in the wings for whom custody was really sought. But I asked the court for that custody to be ordered with Ricky Jackson. Without clarifying that, without saying, you know what, Judge, I was really asking for custody for these people, even though I said I was asking for Ricky Jackson, is essentially a subterfuge on the court. I'll reserve the rest of my time. Thank you, Your Honor.
Good afternoon.
Well, thank you. May it please the court and Mr. Enns. My name is Kent Schroeder. I obviously represent the appellee. I'm the Schroeder of the Ross, Schroeder & George. This particular situation started out many, many years ago when actually Lynn and D. Arts were on the other side of a case involving a sewer line serving their house. I happened to be counsel on the opposite side of that matter. And then maybe 10, 12, 15 years ago, and I believe this is in the testimony, I had an occasion to store a boat with Len Arts. So I knew the Artses for quite some time. Good people, very good people. The original attorney in this matter was Nancy Freeburg, who filed a complaint on February 16th of 2010 on behalf of Ricky Jackson in an attempt to wrest physical custody of Sydney, the daughter of Nicole Hasselbach, and the granddaughter of D. Arts. I also want to point out to the court before I forget it that I'd like to have you take judicial notice of that underlying case, Jackson v. Hasselbach, which was denominated as A101068. Several months later, Len Arts and D. Arts showed up at my office and indicated that they were no longer going to employ the services of Nancy Freeburg, and I made an appearance on behalf of Ricky Jackson on April 21st of 2010. There's a lot of argument about that the three-prong test really applies to malpractice actions, but I would suggest to the court that this phenomena occurs on a daily basis, particularly in family law. It's not uncommon for parents have a child to show up at my office with their child seeking the legal advice from myself and from others in our office. It's particularly prevalent in a university community. I have parents show up with their son or their daughter who were picked up for MIP, public intoxication, procuring liquor for a minor, and in those instances they fill out a client questionnaire. If the parents fill out that questionnaire, I consider them to be responsible for the bill. Obviously, there are two attorney-client relationships there. One.
Excuse me, Mr. Schroeder. I understand that that is not an unusual situation. I think those of us who have practiced in family law know
right.
that happens. But don't you think it's rather unusual for the parents of the mother of the child to come in and talk about giving custody to the father? Which is what they wanted you to do, as I understand.
Well, I suppose from a data standpoint, it might be skewed a little bit that it would be a little bit unusual, but you've got to remember that D. Arts and Lynn Arts were horribly concerned about the well-being of their granddaughter, Sydney, because their daughter had married a rapper, and they had all kinds of evidence that they brought into my office about the language that he used in his rap music, the fact that he wasn't employed, a variety of photographs upon photographs of how Sydney was being mistreated. If you'll remember, if you go back and look at the original case, it was D. Arts, based upon a telephone call from her daughter in San Antonio, Texas, that said, I can't handle Sydney anymore. Please come down to San Antonio and pick up your granddaughter and take her back home because I can't handle her. That's how this whole thing started. Sydney lived in Kearney, Nebraska, attended Park School for well over a year. The other kind of relationships that I thought about today, was it a call from an insurance company? You know, Mr. Shorter, we'd like to employ your services to represent one of our insurers. Again, attorney-client privilege with the insurance company, attorney-client privilege with the named insured. Interestingly enough, your previous case, the appellee said, well, I was representing the estate, but I was really representing the widow. Same kind of problem.
Can we go to the test that the court used, the test from McVeigh's, on whether an attorney-client privilege or relationship existed?
Sure, I'd be glad to.
And can you address the appellant's argument that that's the wrong test to apply, that it should be a basic implied contract case?
I totally disagree with that. The attorney-client relationship ordinarily rests on contract. But it is not necessary that the contract be expressed or that a retainer be requested or paid. The contract may be implied from the conduct of the parties. The relationship. Now you need to connect the word contract and relationship. What that is really saying is the contractual relationship is created when, one, a person seeks the advice or assistance of an attorney, which I did in this case. The advice or assistance sought pertains to matter within the attorney's professional competence, and the attorney expressly or impliedly agrees to give or actually gives the desired advice or assistance. The difference here between the contractual situation versus the attorney-client privilege or the attorney-client relationship, excuse me, is that in a contractual situation, the aggrieved party could sue the attorney either within 4 years or 5 years. So our Supreme Court and other Supreme Courts have been very specific in pointing out that in those instances where there is an attorney-client relationship and an attorney-client relationship, it's a malpractice action. It's not a contractual action. So that's the distinction that they draw. There is no other distinction as to the attorney-client relationship or the contract that is created by that. The check that was written, and in the memo section they say, the loan to Rick or Ricky Jackson, I have absolutely no control over what they put in the memo portion of their check. So I would imagine and suspect that if after D. Arts calls and leaves a message to file the appeal, that if I had failed in filing the appeal on time, that I should employ Mr. Renz here to raise the attorney-client relationship and suggest that it was no attorney-client relationship and therefore no cause of action against Mr. Schroeder. So I think the county court was clearly correct in their decision. The law is abundantly clear, not only in Nebraska, but the McVaney case, by the way, borrowed the language from the Iowa case from our sister state. At any rate, there was no conflict of interest here. The Arches clearly knew their responsibility and failed to pay our fees as they were incurred. I would encourage the court to simply affirm the decision, not only of the Buffalo County Court, but the Buffalo County District Court as well. Thank you.
Thank you. How much time does Mr. Enns have remaining?
I would agree with Mr. Schroeder entirely that were the Arts is to sue him for malpractice for the results of the case, that they would not have a cause of action. That would almost seem to, not to make a slippery slope argument, but it would also almost seem to open the doors up for any family members who stands to, you know, derive a benefit. And I won't get into that particular portion of the order of the court, but for any of those individuals to have standing to file a suit, the person who's deriving the benefit is the person for whom the judgment is sought. The judgment that was sought was custody. What Mr. Jackson chose to do with that, whether to his detriment or not, which ultimately allowing Sidney to spend as much time and live with the Arts is, did ultimately result, was to his detriment, and that he lost custody at trial. Mr. Schroeder's office sent a letter out to the Artses and to Mr. Jackson saying, do you want to appeal? Sure, if you ask somebody's grandmother after they get convicted in a criminal hearing, do you want to appeal? Well, yes, thank you for asking. Of course they're going to say that. It's the attorney who cloaks them with that authority, and inappropriately so in this case.
We have no further questions.
Thank you,
counsel. Your case is submitted, and you are both excused. That being our last case of the day, we're in recess.
You should
have
my chair.
I am?
No.
Oh.
Me?